Our speaker today is Suzanne Huggins, and the topic, and she'll be ably assisted by her mom, Faye. And the topic is growing up in a gay family. Well, Suzanne grew up in the Unitarian Fellowship of Regina. Her late father was a Unitarian chaplain, and in high school, Suzanne was active in the Unitarian youth group. So this is something of a homecoming for her. So Suzanne and Faye will, I think, tag team their presentation for us today.
Yeah, I was here before we had this building, too. There's still a few that would remember the Odd Fellows Hall services, right? So thank you for the invitation to be here today. My parents divorced, and my mom came out when I was almost two. So I don't remember a time before I got to watch each of them. My father in a loving relationship with a woman, and my mother in a loving relationship with a woman. So to me, it's always been so obvious that love is love, and that there was the only differences in these relationships were the differences in the people in them. So my mom never had to come out to me. It just was our family. It wasn't until I got to school that I learned about prejudice against our family.
Suzanne was 6 years old when she came home to ask me about a word that she'd heard used as an insult by a boy at daycare. She'd heard the word fag before as a reclaimed word that people in queer culture used to refer to each other in a positive way. And she was puzzled that in this case it was obviously meant as an insult by the boy that she heard it used by. And it was my painful task to have to let her know that some people thought that there's something wrong with what she took as normal, and that they used it to put someone down.
It's difficult for any parent to teach their child about prejudice. It's something that I've had to do as well. But it's an even harder task when what you're teaching your children about prejudice is that it's against your own family.
So being a lesbian mother, I faced lots of judgments and risks. Some by the fact that I was a lesbian, which in some people's eyes, particularly at that time, made me an unfit mother, and that people saw that I had what they called a deviant lifestyle, and that made me an unfit mother. Some because of the prejudice that they felt I was exposing my child to. There was also a legal risk. I was at risk of losing my daughter due to the fact of being a lesbian, because at that time there was no legal protection based on sexual orientation. Even though I was fortunate that I didn't face that didn't happen to me. I didn't lose my daughter because of that, because of who my ex-husband was and his values, that didn't happen. I knew lesbians who did lose their children simply because of their orientation. And I also knew that it was granted to me. I was powerless in that situation to prevent that from happening. It's just my ex-husband's good graces that he didn't use that power against me. But I did feel vulnerable. And unfortunately, I also know lesbian mothers who, much more recently, even since we've had legal protection for sexual orientation, have been treated very poorly by the family law system, despite the fact that there should be protection, because legal protection is one thing and it's very important, but people can still discriminate, and particularly judges and the legal system can still discriminate and get away with it, unfortunately.
But for us, we were just a normal family. doing the dishes together, listening to CBC radio, going to school plays, all of those kinds of things. Any damage that I suffered was due to other people's reactions to our family. Some people took it upon themselves, upon learning of Mom's orientation, to tell me that I was going to go to hell and suffer because of it. I'm going to do that. One significant example was when I was in grade 5, there was a girl that was my best friend. Her name was Elizabeth. And Elizabeth and I, as 10-year-old girls do, had sleepovers at each other's houses. We spent lots of time together at school talking and bonding and telling secrets. And we were very close and had spent time with each other's families. And in grade 5, we got approached, and I ultimately agreed to participate in a CBC News TV special about the changing family. And so our family was featured as part of this news broadcast. And at that time, we chose to conceal my identity. And so I spoke in it, but used a pseudonym, and my face wasn't shown, and that kind of thing. But Elizabeth and her mother together saw this news program on television. And Elizabeth said to her mother, "That's Suzanne." And the reaction was swift and immediate. And Elizabeth was forbidden to be my friend and was instructed she was never to speak to me again, despite the fact that we had been best friends and lived in, like, went to the same class and all that. And that was my best friend, and that was very traumatic. And she never did come to our home again, or I went to hers, and we didn't speak anymore at school. And that was very difficult, of course.
I was heartbroken for Suzanne when she lost her best friend in this way. It was a totally helpless feeling to watch this happen, and though there was nothing I could do to protect her from this or to make it better. I was also appalled at the injustice of making a child suffer, or children suffer, because of something that had nothing to do with the children. It was odd because I felt responsible in some way, yet I knew, because it was about me, yet I knew it was not my fault. I knew that it wasn't my sexual orientation that was the problem. It was people's closed-mindedness and hatred. The choice I made was whether or not I would be honest about who I was and whether I would be a whole person or not. And the choice I made the choice to be honest and be a whole person for myself and to model that way of living to my daughter.
Another effect was that I didn't see our family reflected around me. Was a small number of other families that we knew, but sometimes it took a while for those families to find each other when people were living relatively closeted at that time. And, you know, because of my age, and Mom came out in about 83 or so, this was before Ellen. This was before, Will and Grace. This was before any charter protections. And so, of course, those moments in time were significant moments in our family, that there was more acknowledgement of different families, that there, you know, we went to the legislature when the changes to the Human Rights Code in Saskatchewan were passed, for instance. Those were important moments in Mom's life, but also in my life. We also didn't see my family reflected in school, For instance, like there'd be like a family tree project, come home and fill this out, right? And it didn't even reflect the concept of divorced families. And like this was the 80s, it wasn't that uncommon. So it didn't even reflect divorced families, let alone other blends of different kinds of families. Over time, my relationship to the information about mom changed. So when I was quite young, kind of in reaction to having learned about the prejudice, it was kind of a secret that I shared with just like my closest friends, you know, that I could reveal and explain why I had so many moms, because there was like dad's wife and mom and mom's wife, right? And that was still when I met my husband, a bit of an eyebrow raise that he's going to have three mothers-in-law. But when I was a little older, you know, like when I was in high school, telling people it was almost like a challenge, like, yeah, what are they going to say? Maybe there's some shock value there. I'd love to argue with you about it. But it was, I also kind of used it as a bit of a test, right? Like, I wanted to tell that to someone pretty early in our friendship, because depending on how people reacted to that, that was a good indicator as to whether I was going to waste my time on investing in this friendship, because if that was going to be a problem for you, you weren't worth my time. And as I've become an adult, less for the shock value, but now it's just another fact about my family and about my my childhood, that kind of thing. You know, like, it's not news to me, so I don't really care if it's news to anybody else. Despite some of the difficulties I experienced, growing up with a lesbian mom and with her network of gay and lesbian friends, it also gave me gifts. One of those big gifts was that because of my own experiences and because of the experiences that I saw people I loved going through, I really became more aware of and attuned to oppression more generally. Social justice became very important to me, not only on LGBT issues, but that also transferred to other kinds of difficulties and other kinds of hatred. And so I'm also a passionate advocate about poverty and about racism and other related issues. And so, like, for context, I was at 6 years old, I marched in the first gay pride parade in Regina. And that was in 1989, and at that time, the group had applied for a proclamation, like the city's proclamation, and it was refused. And I don't remember the specifics. I can't remember. I don't believe we got an actual permit for the parade. But it was a small group, but it was a very different feeling at that time. So the whole... Everyone that participated in that parade wore masks or bags over their heads, and that was a political statement and a show of solidarity with the many members of the community who weren't safe to be out and to show their faces. And that was either we're worried about their jobs, we're worried about their family, we're worried about being assaulted. And so myself, I had that mask for probably 20 years after that. And I remember just that feeling, that small group, and I also remember that parade that Bill Watcott followed us and took pictures. And it wasn't like taking pictures like, look at this beautiful festival, like just the feeling, it was very ominous of why was he taking pictures of us all. And, you know, at six, I could read his sign, and you can just, you know, kids are really sensitive to the feelings, right? So we could pick up on that his intentions weren't supportive. So though those kinds of experiences had great influences on me, and that became really, really important. So it's interesting, as an adult, I'm not gay, and I have kids. I have a 5-year-old son, Dalen, and a 12-year-old daughter, Savannah. And this queer culture is the culture that I grew up in. And the challenges and the gifts that came along with it were sort of the story of my growing up. That's what I was immersed in. And my kids aren't growing up in that same culture. That I'm not, as a straight adult, a member of that community in the same kind of way. And my kids have the privilege of not having anyone prejudice against their family, telling them they're going to hell, wishing pain upon their family. But they also miss out on the learning from it. Like, there was a few years when my kids were younger that mom was single, and a conversation that we had is, like, do they even know that she's gay? Like, how would they know, right? And it can be really invisible because of heteronormativity and kind of that's the majority. And if you aren't exposed to anything else, or you don't talk about anything else, it just becomes assumed, right? So something I've had to think about very deliberately in my parenting, as to what can I do to pass this on to my children and to share some of that with them. So I think it feels a little bit like, just a little bit, but maybe I feel like an immigrant family trying to preserve a culture from a land that we've left when we're immersed in a new culture. You know, and I'm trying to pass on the language and the traditions, and sometimes they're interested and sometimes they're like, Mom, what are you talking about? And so the things that I do, my resistances to do that, is something that's an important tradition that I've carried on with my kids, is that every year we participate in the Pride Parade. So I did it as a kid, and now I take my kids. And I feel like that's important partly because it just gives us that time to talk about it again, specifically, right? That we participate. Why are we going to this parade? What's that about? Why is it important to do it? Who are we going to see there? All that kind of thing. So that's partly about exposing my kids to it and being deliberate about having those conversations. It's also because I was in those parades when it wasn't a festival and when it felt very scary and alone, and I don't want people who are coming out now to feel the way that we felt at that time. And so going is a show of solidarity, to go as an ally and to be connected and to show that there's a community of love and support, even in the challenges that people continue to face. Something else that I do is I'm choosing to educate myself about issues for transgendered people, because that's for me, a relatively newer issue that wasn't as much on the forefront when I was growing up in the community. And so it's certainly something that I'm open to, but something that I don't have as much personal experience with, but I want to educate myself and to learn and to be able to incorporate that in my understanding of the world. I also, for many years, sang with Prairie Pride Chorus, the LGBT choir in Regina, and that was for quite a few years, including like my whole pregnancy with Savannah, and everyone from the choir that was there at that time, still when they see her, says, oh, I remember you were the choir baby, because she used to come when she was tiny and she'd nurse, and or she'd be on a blanket nearby, or different people took turns holding her. So I think she knows the watershed stories better than the rest of us, probably. And another important piece of what I try to remember to do is to challenge heteronormativity, to challenge the assumption that everyone is straight. And we do that sometimes without thinking, right? So people will say things to my kids like, oh, to Savannah, got any boyfriends yet? And so I always chime in, or girlfriends, you know? And trying to and trying to get away from assuming a gender binary, not making things about gender as important or central, and challenging assumptions about what that's going to mean for my kids. They're, you know, so people say to Dalen, oh, he's such a boy. Well, he's a kid, you know, and just trying to allow them to grow in the ways that are meaningful for them. And there's still lots of challenges there, I still feel. You know, I don't do it perfectly, and I also sometimes feel really alone in that, right? But I try and do those things deliberately. Like Dalen's favorite pair of pajamas when he was two were, well, he called them his monkey jammies. And they had little monkeys on them dancing about around a whole bunch of pink flowers all over. Whatever, they were just cozy pajamas. But there was like a friend of my ex's that saw that and was like, oh, why are you wearing girls' pajamas? You know, and just making a point of, no, you don't ever say that to my kid again, right? He can wear whatever damn pajamas he wants. And when, for a period of time, when his favorite thing to wear at daycare was a tutu, he could wear the darn tutu. And, you know, and right now, what he's super interested in is Pokemon and motorcycles. And so he can be super into Pokemon and motorcycles if that's what speaks to him. But that I don't need to dictate that to him. And we'll see how I did. Yeah.
And Suzanne was talking about her gifts, and a really big gift for me about having a daughter and being lesbian is that she's a really strong ally, and she's been a really strong ally all along, and I really value that and appreciate that.
And that's all I have to say today. But thank you. Sure. So Wayne said we have some time if you want for comments or questions or whatever. So.
Yeah, my name is Weibo, and I'm a teacher in grade 1 and 2 at Connaught School. And you know,
go Connaught.
Yeah, I will be back in the community later. But one thing that is kind of inspiring and makes me very happy is that for me to be teaching in a classroom and trying to challenge those heteronormativity issues as well, it seems normal for me to do that, where when we talk about, yeah, and, you know, your parents, like, you know, some families have, you know, there might be two moms, there might be two dads, there's going to be some people with mom and dad, and sometimes there's families without a mom, sometimes there's a family without a dad. I feel like sometimes I'm just stringing it all along, but, you know, it's just like, just to give that openness to the kids that there are all these possibilities, but I'm happy that I'm living in a time where I could do that, and I think it's a testament to the work that you guys have done, your generation, to bring these issues forward, so that, you know, even that we're a welcoming congregation here, and I just think it's, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I loved what you did, both of you. So it's so much from the heart. It was wonderful. Thank you. Now I've forgotten what I was going to say. Oh, I know. So you have seen, Suzanne, I was at that same demonstration, of course, way back in 89 with the paper bags on our heads. And now it's a wonderful celebration. And quite a few of you go. But we get people waving and tooting, and very rarely do we get slurs. And you know, there are just so many more people who come, and it is like a festival now. And it's wonderful that we get permits. And when I was in Vancouver, the march is huge. You wait for, I think, about 2 hours for everybody to go past you. And what moved me the most was to see the RCMP, a full squadron of RCMP in full uniform marching in the parade. I just wept. Like, mm-hmm. tears were just streaming down my face. It was just, you know, what a change. So, and I just often wonder, like, what is it that people are so full of hatred and scorn, and is it a sense of inadequacy within themselves that they have to put other people down? Is it they're not feeling okay about their own sexuality, or what is it that they have to do this to others? That's sort of my question.
And just wanted to add to your comment about the festival thing. Like, so this year is the first time I've noticed, anyway, I was thrilled to see downtown on Broad Street in Victoria, you know, where they have like the banners, they put seasonal different banners up. Merry Christmas, the Pan Am Games, whatever. And there's like QC Pride is what's on those banners downtown. So I think that's awesome, right? It's not just the parade that it's like the community is adopting it as well. So.
Do you think that this anti-gay feeling that has been is a reflection of our society? Because there are societies where the gay community has been accepted.
I think it's a process. I think certainly that gay, you know, GLBT here, much more accepted than it used to be. I mean, and I think, you know, that will only increase and people will get their heads around the whole gender identity issue and transgenderism and understand that as well. However, we need to keep in mind that there's lots of places in the world still where it is illegal to be gay, that you can be killed for it. Like, there is lots of hatred out there. Still, it hasn't gone away.
We're honored. Like in some ancient societies, gay people were honored.
Yeah, that I think that's part of the history that we've lost, that we've been reclaiming. That wasn't understood. So,
thank you very much. I just wanted to say that, you know, a lot of it really helps when we grow up in an environment as you did, that is open to things. Like, I think there's several things I was thinking about as you were speaking. The first one was that I used to go get music lessons at a group with a group of music teachers, and one of the, now this is you know, 50 years ago, and one of the teachers was out of the closet and open about it, and so it just became normal. And that's wonderful. Another thing I was thinking about, that when I was a child, I was in an irregular situation because I had only a mother, because my father died just before I was born. And that was always sort of problematical, because people couldn't kind of get their heads around the fact that I had only a mother and grandparents. But what, I mean, it's not as if I had a deprived life. I didn't at all. But one of the things that did happen to my mother was, for all her life, as she was a civil servant, she was paid 4/5 of the salary that a man would have been paid for exactly the same job. And when she was, when she died, one of her friends told me that she had applied to be sort of sponsored by a man, and no man would sponsor her. And my watching my mother go through the difficulties that she went through, it wasn't the gay issue that was big in my life, it was the color issue. And I looked at my mother and said, it's absolutely not fair that she doesn't get paid the same as a man just because she's a woman. So I could look at black people and say, it's absolutely not fair that they can't do exactly the same things as white people just because they're black. And, you know, I really appreciate that. But then there was one little cameo that came up. It was my cousin, Fred, who's a little bit older than me, riding a tricycle wearing a little Bo Peep outfit. And I've got that on a cine reel. And I've got to get those off at some point. But it was, you know, he was tearing around the yard with, as I said, a beautiful little blue dress on. I don't think my cousin Fred would be happy with what I'm saying. Oh, sorry.
Just adding to the culture thing, I think the one culture that I know of that basically the gays were basically, there was a lot of gay people, was the Greeks. Like the Spartans were probably one of the best warriors ever, and they basically rammed each other in the butt, sort of thing. And they were supporting morale too. And it wasn't until like, you know, the religions like basically like Islam, the hateful religions that were now known as Christianity and Judaism and Islam, where they came in, they basically started off in like Roman, where they started all that anti-gay bullshit.
I just have to think for a second about what I was going to say. Oh, right. When I was a teenager, I was part of a Unitarian youth group, and I found it extremely important because things were pretty restrictive in Alberta in the 1960s. You know, there was the Society for the Prevention of Sex Education. There was any number of things, and I'm sure that anyone who was gay or lesbian, it didn't dare come out openly in most cases. So do you feel like being part of the Unitarians and part of the Unitarian youth group had any beneficial, you know, did it play much of a part in your youth, Suzanne?
It was definitely an important influence, something that a consequence of some of the hatred that I experienced is because specifically religion was often used against us, it certainly made me mistrustful of a lot of organized religion because it was used against me in a negative way. So, you know, there's only so many times someone can yell at you, God hates your family, without that having some effect on your relationship to how God might, what role God might have in your life. So it was certainly positive to have a community to come to that had the principles and values that that embraced in a more wholesome kind of way, embraced different people, and you know, and it was certainly my experience in the youth group here and in the congregation as well that. That we were accepted, and you know, Dad was very active here for around those years, and my mom had attended at times as well, and you know, and so it you know, it was definitely positive to have. It was one of those enclaves in my life that was embracing, and even though it wasn't about that could just sort of be part of my truth, and it wasn't a big deal. So, and it was also good to just have that experience that that there were loving communities as well, and that we could talk about spirituality, and sometimes we would talk about God or what, you know, whatever that would be for individuals, but that that it could be in a loving and embracing kind of way.
We'll take one more.
Dave. Thank you very much. On the question of gay, lesbian, and all that, it's quite a vast field. There's an interesting, very, very interesting article in Harper's Magazine, which deals with celibacy. And what it deals with celibacy is, the author is quite insightful in looking at choosing the life that she does in the absence of other women, in the absence of other men, and simply, similarly, pursuing a life that enriches herself, her spirit and her own. And so that when she looks, so not she, because she makes so many, it's a man actually who wrote this article, but he makes so many reference to women's involvement in his life that I started using this as a point of reference. But what he says is that the riches does not sink those who choose to become gay in order to fulfill themselves or being driven by a given need. That's their own thing. And those who choose to lead lives of celibacy, even within marriage. It doesn't mean that they are gay. I mean, for all intents and purposes, the world outside that looks into that relationship would look at it as there's something wrong here. That's why these people are not engaged in what others are doing. That's my first point. The second thing is, I come from a society, a country, with multiple original societies, tribes, Zulu, Xhosa, and so on. And among these societies, I lived among most of them, I found the absence of gay persons. The absence of gay persons within this community, we only saw it emerging within urban societies when there was a more relaxed, because remember, tribal societies are very restrictive, very, very much so, in adhering to the given codes of law and behavior. And so that when they were in, when members of these societies find themselves within an urban, relaxed atmosphere, that's when those who choose to pursue a gay life suddenly emerges. And we're surprised, and we look, and we rejoice, and we're shocked, and we see, ah, this is what's happening here. A few years ago, I'm sorry, I'll be done quick. We attended a conference in Ottawa, Culture and Technology. The emergence of technology, what happens with writing and with all the whole creative process. This was my take on that thing. My take was this. The Western world looks at the tribal society as something to flee to go to live in pure essence. There is nothing further from the truth. Because within that tribal society, the gay, the lesbian, the artist is the most persecuted individual.
Thank you.
Thank you. One thing I thought of just when you were talking about the article about the celibacy and the choices that different people are making was about that I... My own hope, the direction that we're going, is about embracing a broader richness of whatever truth that people need to live, and that that we'll be able to let go a bit of the boxes that we need to fit people in, right? Is it important to define someone as you are gay or you are straight or you are bisexual, you are male or you are female, or, you know, and wanting to move towards just a more acceptance of human in all of its different variations, and so I to see room for all of that richness. We're a long way from there, but that's the direction that I choose to move in, and I know lots of other people want to go there too. So, thank you.